The following talk was given by Jed Larson at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on December 14, 2025. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning. Good to see you all. Nice chilly morning here. Congratulate you for making it out today. Well, Buddhism, in a, I think, deep sense, helps us take a close look at our life in so many different ways. And one of those things that came up for me in thinking about the talk today is how we can tend to be drawn to having life go according to our plan, or just about the different desires that come up in our life, how we're sort of drawn to things going a certain way. I thought of, you know, what's the granddaddy of all those things? And I thought, well, maybe like winning the lottery would be, you know, that would like solve all our problems, right? And then I remember having the recollection somewhere, and so I had to research it again about what happens to people who win the lottery. And I think it's something like 70% of them actually end up in bankruptcy at some point or something. Or they're basically back to what they were to begin with. So that's sort of something I want to explore a little bit in the talk today, about how it's interesting to think the things that we think make life easy are not necessarily so. You know, it's sort of flipped around on us in so many different ways. What we expect doesn't turn out the way we want it to. So taking a little closer look at this tendency for wanting things to go a certain way, it often comes in a couple of different forms, and that's like getting the things that we want, like the material things, or having situations change a little bit, you know, tweaking something. We had the chance, my wife and I had the chance to go to a concert last Friday, Friday. And I don't know, what was the temperature Friday night? It was windy too. It was like, was it below zero? I think the wind chill was definitely dipping down there. So we got to the church. It was Bach cantatas. There's like a Bach series where he focuses on the Christmas season for this particular piece. But we got to the church like about when, this is basically my fault. I was like, well, we got plenty of time. But so we showed up there right at when the concert was probably about to start. Of course, the whole parking lot's full. And then, so since the parking lot's full and since it's like below zero and it's windy, the closest place to park is about three blocks away. So, you know, this thing that's going on about this is not ideal, I wish it was something else, was definitely coming up for me, you know, and it does for all of us in different situations. But that really boils down to a sense that we have that, you know, this is happening, but there's something else that is more desirable. And then we perhaps get more familiar with Buddhism and learn about these things. And then we take up a meditation practice and we'll be sitting, and then we can see how much thinking comes up, you know, this dynamic of wanting things to be a little bit different. And, you know, we sort of recognize, yeah, this is, there's something going on here. It's almost a bit tiresome to see this thinking happening, you know, pretty continually. But I think it's good for us to recognize that thinking is not the adversary. You know, we could come up with an idea. Well, maybe we could get a lobotomy or something like that. And obviously, we know that's not a solution. So, thankfully, Buddhism points at more of a gentle practice, a compassionate way of understanding what's going on here. And even if we could stop thinking, we would still be fooled by thought. You know, if somehow we could just sort of blank our mind or something like that, there would still be this, I think underlying that would be a compelling sense that there is still this kind of something better. You know, there'd still be a notion of, you know, wanting to sort of negotiate. We wouldn't be understanding kind of the confusion that goes along with grasping after ideas and attributing truth to this idea of how it is and how we would rather it be. So the Buddha, in his quest, was looking for something more natural for us to actually understand the source of difficulty that comes up in life. Because ultimately, I think in our attempt to try to find ways to make things easier for ourselves, we're just trying to find a way to settle down, to find peace, really. But the Buddha found that when we distract ourselves, that's actually difficulty itself. So in a lot of ways, like I was saying before, it can seem a little counterintuitive. We entertain ourselves and distract ourselves, and it seems like it's making things better, or that's what we want. But the Buddha is pointing us to, you know, just a quiet insight here that this distraction is actually, there's something uneasy that comes right along with that. Not to judge that too much, but just to notice that. So the Buddha was, in his teachings, always recommends that we turn back towards our life, which has a little bit different flavor of this. This is how it is, and I would rather it be somewhere else, something else. The Buddha's emphasis was, let's take a close look at our life, you know, really have this intimate look at what's happening in our life. There's a story that I read recently from the book Hidden Lamp. It's just a quick story here that I wanted to bring in. And this is a story about a Zen convent. So it's an interaction between a nun, an elderly nun, and a servant there. I'll just read through this real quick. So Chiyono was a servant in the Zen convent who wanted to practice Zazen, or sitting meditation. One day she approached an elderly nun and asked, "I am of humble birth. I can't read or write and must work all the time. Is there any possibility that I could attain the way of Buddha, even though I have no skills?" And the nun answered her, "This is wonderful, my dear. In Buddhism, there's no distinction between people. There's only this. Each person must hold fast to the desire to awaken and cultivate a heart of great compassion. People are complete as they are. If you don't fall into delusive thoughts, there's no Buddha and no sentient beings. There's only one complete nature. If you want to know your true nature, you need to turn towards the source of your delusive thoughts. This is called Zazen, or sitting meditation." So particularly here, it's that last phrase that I wanted to look at, where the nun is saying, if you want to understand this true nature, turn towards the source of your delusive thoughts, which is a different invitation, you know, perhaps a striking invitation, you know. Why would we want to do that? It seems like We'd want to, you know, escape those things. And I should mention here that delusive thought is speaking of the nature of thinking where we are attributing absolute truth to what we believe. So we'll have an idea of that other thing that we want, and it'll be quite compelling because, you know, it seems like a true reality. That other thing is something pretty real for us. So the nun is talking about delusive thoughts that were captured by those. We believe those and they're delusive. So why would we face delusive thought? And in Buddhism, this is an opportunity to see thinking exactly for what it is. Just see thinking straightforwardly. Don't need to judge it as good or bad. And then I think also the question comes up is, how do we see thinking for what it is? And I think it's always been helpful for me to really train my mind back to the importance of practice itself. So we have these teachings that can help us understand how we'll sort of get into counterintuitive ways of working with our life. So the teachings help us get back to what's important, understanding what this delusive thought is. But ultimately, the practice is the core of what the Buddha was talking about. So to understand the true nature of thought is to carry out this practice, just return to the breath. So, I mean, there's different ways of studying, but if we sort of get caught in the idea that we need to identify thoughts or label them or have some sort of technique or methodology to sort of root those out or something, we'll be off track. So it's, in a good way, it's a simple practice because our sitting is just extremely straightforward. Just come back to this breath. Just be here. We don't need to analyze anything. So, there's some pretty deep teachings also, I think, that can help in terms of just studying and understanding our situation. And some of those teachings seem pretty difficult. They seem pretty foreign to us at times. And one of them that I'll mention here, this will be a quote from the Buddha, but I think it's the type of teaching that can be extremely helpful in sort of recalibrating how we sort of our baseline assumptions about what's going on. So we have this simple practice of just following the breath. And we'll have a lot of assumptions about thought. And this is what the Buddha is speaking about in this particular passage here. And this is a pretty old teaching here. So he says to his practitioners, any kind of material form whatever, any kind of feeling whatsoever, any kind of thought whatsoever, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, all thought should be seen as it actually is with proper wisdom thus. This is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. So the Buddha was saying, any thought whatsoever should be seen with proper wisdom thus. This is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. So that's probably not something that we run across too often, you know, teaching like this, where the Buddha's talking about thought. And I think ultimately what he's getting at here is if we sit down and we notice, and it's just bare experience, any type of attribute of thought being this is mine or this is me, this association that we can often make with the thoughts and so forth. The Buddha is saying that this is not necessarily what is happening. So it's a way for the Buddha to bring us back to the importance of just allowing this direct, bare experience be the teacher itself. And then notions of this is my thought, and then all the kind of subsequent problems that come up about, you know, I want to get rid of my thought, or all the ideas that we have about that, or how we try to analyze different things. And I should say, there's a lot of useful ways of analyzing thinking, using psychology, you know, a lot of useful methods. But here we're getting to something quite particular, just this bare experience and really being here with this direct experience. So we can see that thought is actually, in Buddhism, we see thought as the arising of this inconceivable array of conditions. And you can almost notice that when a thought comes up, it's related to something that you were talking to a friend 20 years about. You know, it's a whole, it's not just, you know, this one person in my thought that I created. It's much more expansive than that. And ultimately, as the Buddha said here, it's this is not me. This is not a personal possession of some sort. And then some other Buddhist teachings that you run across about the nature of the appearances of different things. You know, it could be material things or thoughts or feelings, that they have the nature of arising. They have this appearance of arising. And since they have the appearance of arising, they also have the appearance of ceasing too. And this is helpful, I think, in recognizing that when thought comes up, you know, then it dissipates too. It's this impermanent nature of thinking, much like a cloud forming and then dissipating. So it's just thinking that's arising and ceasing. The Buddha then goes on in that particular section. He elaborates just a little bit further. He says that seeing thus, practitioners, a well-taught, noble disciple becomes disenchanted and unattached to anything that arises. Being disenchanted, they find even-mindedness. Through this tranquility, liberation is found. So here I think the Buddha is pointing at just seeing thinking straightforwardly, noticing this arising and ceasing, natural flowing of experience, not needing to pin anything down in particular, allowing experience to happen. And I kind of like that word disenchanted when I, you know, when preferences are the different ideas I have about this is happening, but I prefer it to be something else. It's almost kind of like being, you know, this enchantment that I have for something else. It's almost like a spell in a way, but just nothing literal there. Just kind of there's something that really has a magnetism to it. But the Buddha is talking about here, about finding even-mindedness in seeing thinking coming up and not being bothered by it. So in meditation, There's just this one thing, you know, to keep things very simple. And it's to take care of our breath. And at the same time, our breath is taking care of us. So very simple and straightforward. So we're continually resuming awareness. And that's not always easy, you know, setting up a sitting meditation, regular schedule, maybe having certain days where we're sitting, setting that up and making that happen, dedicating ourselves to studying this way, or signing up for different retreats. We have half-day retreats and sessions that are a big part of what it is to practice. So, you know, there's a certain amount of energy, and it's not super easy, but it takes some effort. But I think in the end, if we take a look at these teachings and study this a bit, we can see that the path is actually about finding a way of life that is truly at ease. So it's a way to find that even-mindedness. It is it can be a very natural practice too, where we just let thinking drop away of its own accord. It's not that we're trying to control anything or push anything away. So it can be this gentle practice. Well, that's pretty much all I have. I ended a little bit early. I don't know if anybody has any thoughts or comments, questions that came up, or if you have any opinions about the weather. It comes up pretty quickly. You step out the door and we were hearing the level of crunching snow, crunching and crackling, and it's pretty amazing. But it's just like the clarity of in the quiet out there. It's like has this electricity to it, which is pretty special too. It's not all bad for sure. Looks like Dave's got a question.
Well, slow down the emerald ash borer.
Oh yeah, that's right. And wood ticks too, right? If the winters are cold enough, it kills off a lot of the ticks that hurt moose and all kinds of problems. Yeah, no matter what you look at, what seems like bad can, there's always some other side to it, it seems like. I heard that in an interview, somebody who was analyzing, or not analyzing, but doing interviews with people who, the question was, what were their most influential, sort of powerful life moments as they look back on their life? And surprisingly, many of them, or maybe most of them at the time, were quite difficult, you know, as they were experiencing them. But so that is the depth of life, to see this incredible dynamism of what seems like good and bad. You can't really pin any of that down. But yeah, thanks for that. Anything else? We have snow now. We like to cross country ski, so, but I don't know if we'll be doing that. That's the problem with the problem now. We'll have it nice and snowy, and then it'll get too. So yeah, I have my preferences. I want the nice fluffy snow to ski on. Okay, thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.